Welcome, my friends, to the Generations Radio Broadcast. My name is Kevin Swanson, coming to you from my studio out here in the eastern plains of Colorado. I'm a homeschool father of five, raising my children in the 21st century during the decline of the Christian faith. And yet, as we look back over the last 2,000 years, we have to admit there has been some influence of Christianity and the Bible upon Western ethics, Western metaphysics, and epistemology. Something of a Christian worldview is still extant in our culture. So our culture is a mix of 2,000 years of Western Christianity and about 300 years of almost nonstop apostasy from the Christian faith by way of humanism, materialism, and naturalism. And that's why when we take a look at the culture around us, we have to be discerning. We have to take a thin scalpel and carefully wind it through whatever we're looking at, whether it be sports, media, music, movies, you name it. We have to be discerning. Now, some people say the best way to handle the culture today is to hide in a cave somewhere and don't pay attention to anything that's going on and try not to go out and look at the road signs. And whatever you do, don't go to the movie theater and don't listen to any music. Now, that's one solution to the problem. It doesn't necessarily challenge ourselves and our children to a discernment of our culture, and it certainly doesn't create culture changers or culture makers, and I would like my children to be discerning enough to know what's going on in the culture around them. Well, friends, the culture has to be analyzed from a distinctively biblical worldview, and it is a tricky thing because there is a fairly aggressive synthesis going on all the time, which means our music, our movies is going to be somewhat of a mix between that which reflects a biblical worldview and that which reflects the humanist apostate worldview that has sort of crept in over the last 200 years or so. Well, all that said, we are now going to address The Hobbit, which is a movie that came out in just the last couple of days. For those of you who have been hiding in a cave in the mountains and you haven't checked out your Facebook or you've been online or checking out any news reports, The Hobbit, the long-awaited Hobbit, is now in the theaters. And by the way, it did very well in the box office in the first week and did the best that the Lord of the Rings series ever did. That is, of any of the sequence of The Lord of the Rings, it turns out The Hobbit did the very, very best. And apparently also set the record for the number one box office receipts for a December offering. So The Hobbit did very, very well, set some records, and may indeed be the number one box office hit for the Lord of the Rings genre. All right, my friends, we went to see it. Our family went to see it. And this is one of the rules that we have in our family. When somebody in our family sees a movie or watches a movie or something of that sort, we will do it together. And so we did. We did it together. And Emily is in studio with me. By the way, Emily and I also went to see The Hunger Games about 6 months ago. And some of you may remember that broadcast when we got in studio and we took a look at The Hunger Games from what we hope to be a distinctively biblical worldview. And we looked at it piece by piece and sort of analyzed it. And that actually got a fair amount of airplay around the United States and some 100 countries around the world. All right, my friends, today we're going to talk about J.R.R. Tolkien and N.C.S. Lewis. Remember, these are the two guys that had an influence upon literature in the 20th century at a time when, for the most part, humanists were dominating, and you had almost nothing but the nihilism of Nietzsche, the existentialism of John Paul Sartre, and modern literature is shot through with some of the most humanist, atheistic, agnostic, materialistic material you could possibly imagine. But there were two men, at least. I guess you could include somebody like G.K. Chesterton into this, but there were a couple of men, a couple of literary men who still retain something of a Christian worldview. Now, I understand that there are those who disagree with that. They're, granted, with everybody, there's somewhat of a mix. And there was probably somewhat of a mix with these guys. And yet there was a somewhat of a trajectory away from the strident atheism and humanism of the day. And they were sort of fighting that in the 1930s and 1940s. Now, J.R.R. Tolkien, of course, a Catholic, and C.S. Lewis, more of a Protestant persuasion, as I recall. Now, both of these had an influence upon the genre called fantasy. In fact, I'm not sure we'd have much of a fantasy genre if it was not for Tolkien and C.S. Lewis. Now, before I get into this, Emily's in studio right now with me on another mic. The fantasy genre has some problems to it. And we have to be thankful that that The Hobbit and J.R.R. Tolkien and this sort of thing is a far cry from Harry Potter.
Yeah, definitely, that's for sure.
And the blood-sucking vampires. Now, we have not seen any Harry Potters or blood-sucking vampires, as far as I can remember, the history of the Swanson family. For I think obvious reasons, because you know we've discussed that before, but you've got some real paganism coming out now. Not to say there isn't some paganism in some of the J.R.R. Tolkien stuff, but you know, J.R.R. Tolkien still retains something of a Christian worldview and had some self-consciousness about it in his writings. So I feel a little safer about J.R.R. Tolkien than I would with a Harry Potter or the Bloodsucking Vampires, but I still have some problems with the Tolkien books. And as you know, and we've read through those things in our family, and we do it together.
Yeah, we do. I think that's the best way as a family to kind of you hash out the book, especially since you did it with us when we were younger. You were able to kind of explain the story and walk through why we call Gandalf not a wizard, but a wise man, because the word wizard
we didn't want to use the word wizard, right? Because the word wizard implies, at least you look it up in the dictionary and you look it up in the Bible, you find that the idea of wizards and witches is against God's law.
Yeah, it is.
It's like talking about murderers or rapists.
Mm-hmm.
You know, if Gandalf was a murderer, I don't want to talk about a good murderer or a good rapist.
There's no such thing.
Yeah. So I'm not going to start with a word that stands for, implies something that is counter to the laws of God. So that's one reason why we changed that. We changed the reference to Gandalf, right?
Mm-hmm.
He can be a wise man. He can be kind of a counselor or something like that. But we're not going to refer to him as a wizard. So that's something that we did early on when we read through those books. We got to be careful with fantasy, though. That's another thing. That's why I think it's so important to talk about it and not to get lost in the fantasy, but come away from it and say, okay, what does this refer to and what is this metaphoric of? Here's what Tolkien said. Escape through fantasy literature is a desire for finding a better world than the one we live in. In fantasy, the world of fairy, dragons, wizards, and enchanted forests are often more appealing and far less evil than our world with its bombs and machine guns.
Yeah, I think that's true. But I think also that the fantasy genre, at least J.R.R. Tolkien, he seems to show, if you think about it, he seems to show evil, like the ugly orcs and the goblins, for what it really is. I mean, it doesn't look like that in today's world because evil is very deceitful. But as a Christian, looking at that, I'm reminded of just how evil really is.
Mm-hmm.
It's not, there's nothing good about evil.
Yeah. Well, it's important, Em, not to get lost in the fantasy world. And one of the problems, and we'll get into the problems before long, but first I want to talk about some of the good parts. Okay, so coming out of the movie, what are some of the good parts of the movie? Boy, you talk about high tech. You talk about lots and lots and lots of special features, and boy, you've got all kinds of technology that they didn't even have when they did the Lord of the Rings series 8-10 years ago.
It was beautiful scenery, too, which I really love.
Yeah, it was amazing stuff. Yeah, exactly. Well, here's another piece. Now, they're going after the dragon.
Right.
Okay. Now, first of all, if that's the story, this is sort of a big picture of the story.
Mm-hmm.
If they're going after a dragon and you have, you know, the dragon that's taken over a whole civilization, a whole society, a whole area, a whole town, a city where these dwarves lived.
Right.
And so the little dwarves are coming together and they're trying to be big and ferocious and courageous and they want to go and sock
and
it to
your
this
home
dragon.
Back.
Yeah, sure. Yeah. There's nothing wrong with that story.
No, there isn't.
There's nothing wrong with that story.
I'd say that's perfectly legitimate.
Yeah. Reminds me a little bit of Beowulf,
right.
Yeah,
mm-hmm.
And that's Beowulf's got all kinds of references to Jesus Christ and to God and so forth. So yeah, you had some early stories that had tremendous Christian influences, and you can certainly see something like that in Tolkien's reference to this dragon. And remember, the symbol of dragon is a symbol for evil. So all the way back from Scripture, right? Because throughout Scripture, you have that's right. Satan's likened to the dragon. So right away, that's a good symbol, and that's also one reason why I don't particularly like the movie How to Train Your Dragon.
Yeah, because it portrays dragons as kind of like you can make them your pet.
Yeah, exactly. Yep.
Dragons and men can live in harmony and ride on dragons' backs.
They picked the wrong symbol there in that movie. Christians have always recognized dragons to be evil and associated it with Satan,
right,
who rebelled against God and will one day be cast into the lake of fire forever and ever. All right, so that's number one. That was a good part, okay? Stepping back and looking at it, the dragon's the bad guy, and all of these brave little courageous soldiers are going to go after this big old dragon and sock the living daylights out of him and reclaim their little land for themselves. Okay, now you also have references to courage, which is good.
Right.
And you have references to generational bravery exhibited by the dwarves. They're picking up the generational vision of their fathers. They have these pictures of their grandfather and their fathers who fought these mighty wars against the dragons. And they want to pick that up. They don't want to abandon the heritage of the fathers, and they want to go after it. Okay, I also think of Bilbo. You know, Bilbo's this little guy who really wants to be left alone and live in his nice little cottage and doesn't want to go to war. He doesn't want to help anybody else, really. And now they come to him, they say, you know, we really need you to help us to get our homes back. And later on, he kind of presses against that because he doesn't want to participate.
Because he's kind of fearful.
Yeah.
He's kind of that timid little hobbit that doesn't want to do anything but eat second breakfast and smoke his pipe in his front yard.
Exactly.
And he's pushed out of his home to do something really out of his comfort zone.
Yeah, exactly. But at the end, he says why he does it. He comes to a little dwarf captain, and he says, the reason I'm coming here is because I enjoy my home, and I want to help you to get your home back to you. Right. Yeah. And I think that's selflessness. You know, he's willing to give up of himself and be a courageous little man for the cause of defending somebody else's homeland. And it's something there.
And I like that, too, because it kind of defends the principle of having roots.
Yeah.
Because we live in a society that, like you say, is rootless and fruitless. And so we live in a society where people don't establish roots with friendships, with homes, with family. And so that's important. You can tell to J.R.R. Tolkien because he shows that as the life of the hobbits is, it's a sweet life because they've been there for a long time. Generations of their family have been there. And that's what Bilbo wants to help the dwarves do because this is their family home, their heritage, and he's helping them honor that heritage and reclaim their home so they can have roots again.
All right, ladies and gentlemen, Daddy and Emily were in studio or in movie theater and now are in studio, and we have taken so many notes and we have gone over this movie. I'm really recommending that folks really engage the culture together as a family. You know, whatever the culture happens to be, engage it as a family. Your kids are stuffing themselves into a closet somewhere, reading those books and watching those movies on their little iPods or what have you without any parental involvement. And you don't get an opportunity to discuss the positives and negatives of what you're looking at. Friends, that's unhealthy for the family. And that's one of the things that we try to exemplify on this radio program with Emily in studio with Dad. Okay, sweetie, the salvation plan that is presented by Gandalf somewhere in that movie. There's the quote. He talks about another wizard who believes that's only great power that can hold evil in check. He says, that's not what I found out. I have found it is the small things. Everyday deeds of ordinary folk that keep the darkness at bay, simple acts of kindness and love. Why Bilbo Baggins? Because I'm afraid and he gives me courage. All right, so let's take a look at that for a moment. There's some truth there, and yet there's a lack of truth there. Yeah, and that was a real key moment. Wasn't it?
He
was explaining
Definitely.
How they were going to keep the evil at bay.
It was just the little acts of kindness.
Right, right. Now, there is a sense in which he was right.
Right.
In a biblical sense, salvation did come by Jesus Christ, a tiny little baby born in a stable, and a humble prophet from some no account, Nazareth.
Right.
And he died on a cross. It didn't look very, it didn't look like it was going to accomplish very much.
Mm-hmm. But it was a great power. It was God Almighty
who
sent his son.
And that's the other aspect of it, is at the end, it is God himself that raises Christ from the dead by his almighty power. So it was the act of power.
It was the great power.
It wasn't based in man himself and his tiny acts of kindness and love.
Right.
It really was the power of God that accomplishes true salvation for us. And we cannot save ourselves from the evil of this world. And so there's a sense in which, you know, the salvation sometimes comes in sort of nondescript ways. It comes in under the radar, so to speak. And, you know, I ask the question sometimes, are people converted more by Billy Graham or by thousands of humble little pastors working hard in little communities all over the world? You know,
having
little hobbit pastors.
With their parishioners.
That's right. Yeah.
Right.
And I think sometimes the kingdom does come in these surreptitious little ways.
Yeah.
And so there is a sense in which he was right. But in the end, without God, we don't have anything.
Because God is the one who orchestrates the little means.
Yes,
he's the one
does.
That brings all the little details
That's right.
together.
That's right. Well, folks, we've gone over some of the positive parts of a movie that we watched just a few days ago in theater, and that is The Hobbit, now in theaters all around America. And again, I would encourage you, friends, to come away from these things. It's tempting to go one way or the other. It's tempting to come out and say, oh, it's the greatest thing I ever saw. It's wonderful. Oh, I can't stand it. Oh, yeah, I've never seen anything so good in my life. It was the perfection on earth. And then there's, you've seen that, haven't you?
Oh, yeah.
You see that on Facebook.
Like
yeah.
Raving,
it's
where
the
they're
best
so excited.
Movie I've ever seen in my life.
Yeah,
you know?
They come right out of the movie theater, whip out the iPhone and go to Facebook and be like, oh, everyone has to see this because it's just the best, greatest thing on planet Earth.
But the flip side of it is to come out and say, bah, humbug.
Yeah,
well,
and there were
just,
people who
did
that.
Trashy stuff. Yeah, bah, humbug, the whole thing's nothing. So I think, you know, when you're listening to music or you're looking at some movie or what have you, you have to sometimes, you know, slice that thing and say, okay, what are the positives? What are the negatives? We're going to talk about the negatives next on the Generations broadcast. This is Kevin Swanson, and Emily is in studio.
Every year, Generations with Vision sponsors a family economics conference somewhere in America. This year, we are sponsoring two conferences, one in Washington State and the other in St. Louis, Missouri. For families who want to reintegrate the family into a family economic vision, for families who want to find ways to mentor their sons and daughters into the family economy, this is just the conference for you. How do you choose the optimum business dreams for your family? How do you integrate your children into the family economy? What about budgets and debt and capital investments? And what about inheritance and taking care of grandpa and grandma along the way? We'll have young entrepreneur panels, mom and daughter panels, farming panels, retail and e-commerce panels, audience surveys, and some great keynote speakers, including free-range farmer Joel Salatin, entrepreneur Eric Weir, and Kevin Swanson. Join us for our four-day mega conference in St. Louis or the two-day fall conference in Olympia, Washington. Register today at FamilyEconomics.com. That's FamilyEconomics.com. Register now and save. Early bird registration ends on December 31st.
We are back on the Generations Radio broadcast. Daddy and Emily in studio today talking about The Hobbit. It's now in theaters all across America and is, by the way, a box office record for December, or a December offering. And The Hobbit has done very, very well for itself and probably will break the Lord of the Rings record here in the next few weeks. Well, we've been talking about the positives. Emily, you had one more positive you wanted to share before we get into some of the negatives.
I've seen a lot of films in the past few years that have been made, and I really don't appreciate that when I'm watching them, there's a lot of often profanity or sexual perversion where you have these people fornicating or committing adultery with each other, and they kind of portray it as, well, maybe it's not okay or it is okay, and you feel defiled by watching it.
Or just immodesty.
Yeah. Or immodesty.
That you just have to kind of look the other way and you. You're right. And there wasn't a lot of profanity in this movie. In fact, I don't remember even one.
I think someone mentioned Gandalf said
Might have been a minced oath or something.
A minced oath. Mm-hmm. But that wouldn't be even accurate to the way Tolkien wrote. So that would be more of a Peter Jackson just inserting a minced oath in there.
Right. Okay. So you're right. It was a little more comfortable.
Right.
You didn't have to skip a lot of scenes. However, there were some problems. And the problems, I think, relate to the foundational issues. I always get back to this, Emily, when it comes to fantasy or anything else, we have to ask ourselves, what's the basic worldview? What are the foundational worldview issues? And the foundational worldview issues have a lot to do with whether God exists.
Right.
Whether there's a God.
Mm-hmm.
And whether there's a power above everything else and the source of all power. And all control over everything that happens in that reality. And fantasy itself is not immune from that.
No, it's not.
In other words, we can't say that the fantasy genre can do whatever it wants, that fantasy writers can create a world like a god for himself. No, you've got to have some kind of a sovereign. And you have a couple of references to fate. I think
yeah,
I counted three references to fate and one to luck.
Mm-hmm.
Now, as I recall, Tolkien would refer to luck from time to time.
Yeah, he would.
And I would skip that when I was reading it to you. Because, right,
believe in God's
because we
providence.
Don't believe in an indeterminate universe, right. That things happen by
random
indeterminate brute chance. Right. We believe that there's a God who is above it all.
Right.
And he is sovereign over all things. Because either you have an indeterminate or a determinate universe, or you've got man trying to sovereignly control everything that happens, but it turns out you have these equally powerful forces that are either evil or good going at each other in this indeterminate or determinate universe, and it becomes just a mess. So that's a concern that I had, I think, more than anything else, is that you didn't have a reference
right
to any kind of sovereign. You had no clue where these guys were getting their power, and you have no idea why evil is bad.
Right.
That's the other thing. You can get lost in this thing where most people watching the movie haven't read the Silmarillion. You know, they don't know that there's a God behind the whole thing. I think the average person,
no,
you know, he just watches
I don't
the movie.
So.
They don't know that there's a God. All they know is that the good guys look cool. And the bad guys are ugly, generally.
Really ugly.
Generally speaking, yeah, yeah. Until you watch Beauty and the Beast, in which
and
case,
then the good now, guy's ugly.
The good guy's ugly, right? So that just kind of throws you into ethical confusion when that happens.
Mm-hmm.
So the problem is that when you create a moral conflict, but there's no God, you wind up with an arbitrary reason why the evil is evil and the good is good.
And you're wondering why there's that moral conflict, because there's no power that's setting out a law of what's right and what's wrong.
That's right. And I can't remember if they talk about right and wrong very much. I'm not sure they do. But when they do talk about right being right and wrong being wrong, I'm not sure we know why right is right and wrong is wrong. I'm not sure that they have that well established in their own minds.
Mm-hmm.
Now, again, those who've watched the or read the book versus those who watched the movie may know a little bit more about
right. They might have a clearer understanding of
but
it.
But still, that's kind of a cheap way to present a movie, because the movie's the movie, right?
It should be kind of woven throughout every single part of history.
You should know something about.
It shouldn't be, go look in the Silmarillion for the ultimate power, power behind Saruman and Gandalf. These wise men that are using magic.
And I think if we ask the average, 16-year-old girl coming out of that theater, is Sauron evil because he's rebelling against God, or is Sauron just another force in the universe of forces fighting against each other?
She'd probably say
what? I don't know if she'd say anything. She'd probably say, I'm not sure.
I don't know.
Right. And that would be the wrong answer.
Yeah.
Right? That would be the wrong answer. Because if Sauron's just another force in the universe of forces fighting each other, then what makes one force over another force any better than another force?
Right.
Right. So I think that's one of my primary concerns, is that I don't think the average kid watching this movie is getting anything but sort of a relativistic view of good and evil.
Yeah.
And a part of that is due to the fact that that's the world where they live.
Right.
So when they get in the fantasy world, the dragon, whatever they get in the schools, whatever they get in the rest of the media, into their experience in the theater while they're watching The Hobbit, and they're effectively not recognizing God as a source of good and evil in these movies.
Because they've been taught to not recognize God in the rest of their life, so why would they recognize it in The Hobbit?
Yeah. Another one of my concerns is Radagast. Yeah. Was that an issue for you?
I didn't really appreciate the way he was using the incantations. There was the one part in the movie where he was putting his hands or something on this little hedgehog that died because of spiders crawling through the forest.
Let it be said, the hedgehog was cute.
It was really
cute. I mean, that little guy was the cutest little hedgehog.
I wanted a pet hedgehog.
Oh, yeah, you want to get a pet hedgehog. Yeah, right.
But I wasn't comfortable with the way he was muttering these strange incantations.
Yeah. And then
he kind of went,
his eyes went up, looked like he was in a drug-induced stupor. It was not good.
It looked kind of
evil. It was not
evil.
Good. And here's another one of the problems. I already talked about the issue of the wizards and referring to the wizards as wizards being a wrong thing. But now we have a wizard doing
the wrong thing.
So you have the wrong name for the guy. Now he's doing the wrong thing. Deuteronomy 18 and verse 10. I want to bring in this passage, Emma. I didn't read this to you earlier. I'm just going to read it to you right now. Deuteronomy 18 and verse 10 said, "There shall not be found among you anyone that makes his son or his daughter to pass through the fire, or that uses divination or an observer of times or an enchanter or a witch or a charmer or consulter with familiar spirits or wizard. There's wizard mm-hmm. or necromancer.
Right.
Now, it's interesting that the necromancer is the
bad guy.
Yeah. But right next to the necromancer is the wizard in Deuteronomy chapter 18, verses 10 and 11. So again, who's the bad guy and who's the good guy here? The Bible presents the wizard as the bad guy and the necromancer as a bad guy. But the word I want to really focus in on, Em, is from that verse 10 where it talks about the enchanter.
Mm-hmm.
The enchanter is a Hebrew word called nakash, and it is one who whispers a spell.
And yeah, that was him.
That's him, right? Right. It's this secret divination in is what the witches do. Witches do secret divinations. That is, they come up with a recipe through something they whisper that is supposed to not be shared with anybody
else.
Nobody else can understand. That's right. And so it's a secret form of communication, and this is what the Bible forbids. The Bible forbids this. The Bible forbids an enchanter or a wizard whispering some kind of a spell or whispering.
Right?
Well, yeah, it's a serious, serious problem in Scripture. And you know what's happening in our present world, Em, is that people have loosened their perspectives of all these things. And that's why you're constantly seeing these palm readers and all this witchcraft everywhere you look in our present society.
Even things like horoscopes.
Yeah.
People look up their horoscope. And
all tied
like,
into the same thing. But what do you think people would say in response to that? What do you think they, you know, here's a guy doing his enchantment. He's an enchanter. And what do you think would be the response? Or he's a wizard. You know, what do you think people would say in response to that?
I don't know. Well, I think maybe they would say that since he's the good guy, it's for him to be using that. Because
that's
he's using it for good.
That's right.
He's
the
it
good witch.
To revive.
He's the white witch versus the black witch. And there is this distinction between black witchcraft and white witchcraft
that the
witches in our present society maintain, Em. That's that's pretty big for them. You know, not very, very few witches would like to prefer to call themselves a black witch that is trying to do evil things. Most of these witches that are doing the tarot card readings and everything else, and we have one actually here in a little city in Elizabeth, Colorado, sadly. It's a horrible, horrible thing, but I'm sure that she would refer to herself as a Gandalf, a white witch, as somebody doing
she's
good
doing
things.
Doing good things.
That's
with
right.
Her power
with
to
the
do,
powers that she's received.
To consult with familiar
that's
spirits.
Right. But we can't draw that distinction. The distinction between a good witch and a bad witch is like this distinction between a good rapist and a bad rapist. As
there's
defined
no
by Scripture, it's just wrong, and it's wrong because it's against God's law, which is an absolute, established by God himself as an absolute.
Doesn't change.
Yeah. Now, you know, people can say, well, but, you know, he doesn't do exactly, you know, the good axe murderer doesn't, you know, do exactly what most axe murderers do. You know, he's a good
not
axe
as
murderer.
Brutal.
He's not as brutal. He smiles when he brings the axe down. You know, he's just a nice guy. You know,
but it's still
evil. The problem is he's still an axe murderer.
Yeah.
It's still got a word to define it.
Right.
That constitutes a violation of God's law. So that's the problem. And we have to be very careful with how we use language. We have to be careful with how we use actions and describe actions and perform actions and act out certain actions on the movie screen. And for those reasons, I have a serious problem with the way they presented that. It's interesting that that's many of these things that we catch on the movie screen, many of the bad things we found
were
about this
were
not really in the books.
Yeah,
that's
which
interesting.
Is interesting. I think I kind of got the feeling that maybe he was trying to give a little bit of credence to the Harry Potter viewers that like Harry Potter. Give them a little bit of magic. I don't know, but it just seemed like he added a lot of elements of magic and chanting and whispering that weren't in the book. And I think he was just trying to please some of his audience that would have liked that sort of part of the story.
Well, the fact of the matter is that so many people who run into these movie theaters, they don't understand the metaphor. The movie itself actually is more of an encouragement for them to escape the true reality of God himself. And the movie needs to be a metaphor of God and his creation and our relationship to him and the redemption that he provides. And if we lose that metaphor in any of this fantasy, and if we wind up sort of wandering around living in the fantasy world, which a lot of kids do, yeah, it's not any good. It's not any good. And it turns out they're just escaping the true reality of God himself.
Yeah. And I think the thing for me was, it's interesting because I've never been a huge, huge fantasy lover, but I do like the fact that these characters, some people said the Hobbit movie moved really slow, but I felt like I related in some way to Bilbo because I'm more of a naturally fearful individual. So I think, like you said, they can be good metaphors. And just like Bilbo, I have to push myself to, you know, go out and have adventures by fighting evil, mm-hmm. you know, every day by fighting my fears and fearing God alone. So mm-hmm. I think if you look at it as a Christian and you discern it, it can be helpful. But the thing is, oftentimes we watch movies for entertainment or for fun. And I think it shouldn't be a drag to watch a movie if it's a well-made movie with a good story. But I think you still have to retain the discernment and be able to talk to your parents about it too, because yeah. I really appreciate the fact that you don't just say, well, don't watch anything, and you don't give us a reason, mm-hmm. but you say, okay, you can watch this, but I don't want you just watching it to have fun yeah. or just to be entertained. And you really challenge us to think through all the movies we watch. And so that has really helped me to have more of a balanced and a Christian perspective and not desire to synthesize with the entertainment world, which is difficult.
And I think we've tried as best as we can not to excel. I think we've tried as best as we can not to overplay the media in our lives. I think we've gone both directions on that. We've tried to find a happy medium in this, but it's so easy to get lost in the fantasy world and to just get addicted to all of this entertainment that just really constitutes these exit ramps from the highway of reality. So hopefully we've kept ourselves from that. I think all of our movies and our entertainment must give us a sharper sense of reality.
Right.
It must give us a sharper sense of God.
And take us away from reality.
Not a weaker sense, yeah. It should give us a sharper sense. We come out of that theater, we close that fiction novel, we get away from that allegory. We need to be stronger in our faith. Mm-hmm. We need to believe that God exists and God is more of a reality than ever before. Right. And we're going to trust him even more, and we're going to go out there and do brave deeds for him in the years to come.
God can conquer evil through us, and he can use us. But in the end, he ultimately conquers, you know, the works of Satan.
Yeah.
And he's way bigger than Satan. So, like you said, we should come out with that hope. Even if maybe they don't present a greater power, we should remember that the reason that evil was defeated is because of God.
That's right. That's right. Well, thanks, Em. Wonderful, wonderful
thanks,
words today, sweetheart. I'm so glad that we were able to talk about this.
Me too.
It's so important for families to do this. I know that mom spent probably even about an hour and a half talking to you about some of this as well, you know, and she had her concerns and some of her issues and things that she talked about. And this is so important for us as we analyze the culture and hopefully make an impact on the culture around us, always trying to bring a distinctively Christian worldview, a biblical worldview to bear in these areas. Well, ladies and gentlemen, you've been listening to the Generations Radio broadcast with Daddy and Em today. I'm talking about The Hobbit, now in theaters around the United States. This is Kevin Swanson inviting you back again next time as we continue to lay down a vision for the next generation.